IRN, USA Radio News. I'm Mark Thomas. One thing Senate Democrats and Republicans agree on could mean help for unemployed veterans and companies doing business with the government. The legislation also includes the first tiny slice of President Barack Obama's jobs plan that is likely to become law. It would include tax credits for hiring disabled vets. Forecasters say Tropical Storm Sean could become a hurricane as it makes a turn to the northeast toward Bermuda. A tropical storm warning is in effect for Bermuda, and forecasters are warning of strong surf and rip currents. There's still no official word on arrests after police used pepper spray on about 2,000 students who gathered in State College, Pennsylvania to protest the firing of head football coach Joe Paterno. The Penn State students flooded downtown for about 3 hours after Paterno and University President Graham Spanier were fired amid a growing furor linked to their handling of sex abuse allegations. This is IRN, USA Radio News.
Hey guys, Macy's Veterans Day sale is the way to build your wardrobe. With 50% savings on the season's best outerwear, sweaters, woven tops, and more. 50% off designers like Tommy Hilfiger, Kenneth Cole Reaction, and Calvin Klein. And it gets even better with an extra 15 or 10% off when you use your Macy's card or savings pass. It's the way to save right now in the men's store at Macy's. Savings off regular sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.
Final round time. If two's company and three's a crowd, what's 207?
A bar mitzvah?
Correct. Opportunity never knocks twice. Why not?
It's got sore knuckles?
Correct.
Yes.
How fast does Netflix let you watch TV episodes and movies?
Instantly, through your game console or other devices.
Correct! Watch unlimited TV episodes and movies for only $8 a month from Netflix. See terms of use.
Yeah.
Sir, put your shirt back on.
But I'm excited.
You're scaring the children.
A new poll finds that baby boomers are less confident they will be financially secure in retirement. More now from correspondent Tim McGuire.
An Associated Press LifeGoStrong.com poll shows that just under half of boomers, 47%, are confident that they will live a comfortable retirement. That's a substantial drop from the 55% who felt the same way just in March. The loss in confidence is due to the fact that more than 6 out of 10 say they have lost money on investments. Those losses are causing many to rethink their retirement, 73% now saying they will work after retirement. Tim McGuire, Washington.
The government is warning about a growing problem with powerful ball-bearing magnets and the risk they can pose to children. The magnets are used in desktop toys for adults. The CPSC says when two or more of these tiny magnets are swallowed, they can attract to one another and lead to serious internal injuries. For the latest news and analysis, log on to IRNUSANews.com.
Hey guys, Macy's Veterans Day sale is the way to build your wardrobe. With 50% savings on the season's best outerwear, sweaters, woven tops, and more. 50% off designers like Tommy Hilfiger, Kenneth Cole Reaction, and Calvin Klein. And it gets even better with an extra 15 or 10% off when you use your Macy's card or savings pass. It's the way to save right now in the men's store at Macy's. Savings off regular sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.
Iran's top leader is warning the U.S. and Israel not to attack. More now from Middle East correspondent Mark Levy in Cairo.
Top Iranian leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei warns if the U.S. or Israel, which he calls its pawns, the Zionist regime, attack Iran, the Iranian response will be a slap in the face with an iron fist. This shows Iran takes seriously hints coming out of Jerusalem about the possibility of a military strike against its nuclear facilities. It follows release of a report by the International Nuclear Watchdog with evidence Iran is crafting nuclear weapons. That could lead to new sanctions against Iran. Mark Levy, Cairo.
International stock markets tumbled today due to setbacks in Europe's efforts to isolate a debt crisis before it engulfs Italy or blows up into an all-out recession. Futures trading suggests a lower open on Wall Street today. Global stock markets were rattled after Italy's main borrowing rate blew past 7%, putting the country at the front and center of a debt crisis that had until recently focused mainly on Greece. As the third largest economy in Europe, Italy's $2.6 trillion debt is considered too large for other European countries to absorb. A default could lead to the disintegration of the euro currency used by 17 nations or a debilitating recession. In Greece, officials are trying for a fourth day to name an interim prime minister. Recapping one of the hour's top stories, forecasters say Tropical Storm Sean could become a hurricane. It's currently headed toward Bermuda. With IRN, USA Radio News, I'm Mark Thomas.
Good morning. I'm Jack Mizell, and each day we do interviews. And today we're pleased to have one that's centered on the topic about Hollywood. And on the phone with me from California is Galen Whitley Keith, and she's written a book called The Father of Hollywood. And we certainly want to welcome you to Southeast Alabama. Good morning.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here today.
Yes.
It's a beautiful day, kind of early in California, but it's a good day.
Well, has the sun come up yet in California this time?
No, I'm actually sitting in my office that looks out on the lake, and the moon's shining beautifully over the, the lake. But fortunately, last week, the time had just changed.
Yes.
So I haven't really changed over. So it's more like it's 7 o'clock, really.
Yes.
Here.
Well, yes. Well, tell me, is it true that Hollywood is 100 years old?
It is true. I'm lucky enough. My great-grandfather is the founder of Hollywood. In fact, he's buried in the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, and on his grave, it does say the father of Hollywood. And when he passed away, like the Los Angeles Times, New York Times, and the local citizens declared him that. And so it's pretty amazing, really. But the reason he got that title was not too long ago, October 26th, 1911, well, that's a while ago, but the 100th anniversary was only a few weeks ago. Back in October 26, 1911, he was fortunate enough to be walking down the street, since he was the developer of Hollywood, and he happened to meet a man named David Horsley. And David Horsley was a young, budding filmmaker who had just arrived from New York, because originally the major part of the movie industry was in New York. And David Horsley asked for directions, and being the good businessman he was, the caring man he was, instead of just pointing him to his destination, he actually walked him to where he wanted to go. And while they were walking, he found out all about David Horsley and his filming, and offered the Whitley Estate, which would be on the corner of Hollywood and Highland Boulevard, to do a filming. And they, on October 26, 1911, they did a test run. It was a success. And the next day, October 27th, Blondew Tavern was leased by David Horsley, and he formed Nestor Studios, the first studio to come to Hollywood. So he got the first studio to come, which is kind of exciting. And that studio eventually merged in, you know, did different mergers over the years and became Universal Studios. So that was the beginning of Hollywood, first movie. Probably one of my favorite stories that my grandparents, or my great-grandparents actually did, was they actually named Hollywood as well.
How'd that happen?
Do you have any idea how?
No, I do not. I've often wondered.
I would say most people have. Well, when I tell the story, most people go, "Really?" Because it's so amazing. But what happened was, on their honeymoon, this would be in 1886, they came out. Actually, they had met in California the year before. My great grandmother was out on a vacation with her uncle, and my great grandfather worked for the Chicago Rock Island Railroad. He actually built towns. Prior to getting to Hollywood, he built over 100 towns, started them. So they were out on their honeymoon, and they got on their horses and rode out to the foothills of the Cahuengas, and they were looking at the beautiful view, because on a good day, at least back then, you could look out and even see the Pacific Ocean. And lo and behold, along came a man, and he was in a wagon. And since they were standing looking, he stopped his wagon. He got out, and he was Chinese, and he bowed courteously to them. And fortunately, he spoke a little English, and so my great-grandfather said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Up early, work hard, Hollywood," because he was hauling a wagon of wood. And so right then and there, my great-grandfather kind of had this epiphany and said, "That's it, I'm going to name the town Hollywood." And the reason why was he was British, and Holly represented England, and wood would represent the forests of Scotland. So that's how they came up with the name Hollywood.
Really and truly, now, it's a true story. The guy couldn't speak proper English, so he said Hollywood rather than Hollywood.
Right. I wished I had a Chinese accent because it would make it much better if I could say Hollywood or something. But he just said Hollywood because he didn't speak English too well, and that's how they came up with the name.
Then
they decided while he was still there on their honeymoon, he met with a man who owned property there in Hollywood. It was Mr. Hurd, and they, on a handshake, because back then, you know, it was way different than now.
Yes, definitely.
You didn't have like 25 pages or a 150-page contract. You just shook hands and agreed, and he agreed for $22,000 gold to purchase 580 acres of Hollywood.
Wow.
And it would run from La Brea to Cahuenga. If I don't know if people in Alabama will even know what that means, but it's a nice piece of property with the center of it is currently where the Kodak Theater, where they do the Academy Awards.
Wow. That's some history.
That's where he started out.
Now, what was your great-grandfather's name and your great-grandmother?
My great-grandfather was named Hobart Johnstone Whitley, and he usually went by H.J. I think back then a lot of people used their initials for their name, not sure why. And my great-grandmother was named Margaret Virginia Whitley, and she went by Gigi, was how she was familiarly known. So they started off quite excitingly. They purchased the land on their honeymoon, and then actually he had prior business to complete since he was on the board of the Chicago Rock Island. He actually ended up going back to Dickinson, North Dakota, to a bank he had just built, and he was starting that town. And he was fortunate enough on the 4th of July, 1886, he had become friends with Teddy Roosevelt, because actually Teddy Roosevelt's wife and child had died, and wife and mother had died, and my great-grandfather had actually lost his first wife and child in a fire, so they kind of had a bond from that, and they did cattle runs together before either one remarried. And so he went back to North Dakota and had Teddy Roosevelt came and spoke, and then when the roundup came, my great-grandfather actually went up on a roundup of cattle.
How about that?
So he was quite a guy. So after that, they stayed in North Dakota for a while, and then he went back to the Oklahoma Territory, and Oklahoma was opening up. And he was there on the first day of the Oklahoma Run, which is kind of exciting. So
yes,
he did the run. But what he was looking for wasn't what most of the people there were looking for, big pieces of land. What he did is he found or claimed land in the town of Guthrie, which was to become the first capital of Oklahoma. And he went and spoke before Congress to help that happen. So he was quite a man.
Yes, a lot of achievements.
Right. Wow. He was quite amazing. And so then after that, he returned back to California and began working on Hollywood. So I think that's kind of exciting. I know, when he arrived,
yes,
because he had learned that if you're going to sell, he was into selling land, obviously, and developing it. So the first thing he did is he built a hotel and a bank. Because what's better than a hotel and a bank? Because if you're going to have people come look at your land, they don't have a home yet. It's vacant land. So while they're building their house, they stay in your hotel, and you finance it at your bank.
Yes,
the building
very smart.
Of the home. Right. So he built a beautiful hotel that would be on the corner of Hollywood and Highland, which is in the heart of Hollywood. And it was a luxury hotel, kind of a vacation resort hotel that you could come stay at. And so in the beginning, early stages of Hollywood, the stars would come and stay at this hotel. And he had stars like Rudolph Valentino, for example, stayed in the hotel. And he wasn't discovered yet. So what he was doing was teaching tango lessons. And so
Very interesting. I bet nobody's ever heard of that before, but Rudolph Valentino was a tango dancer. He taught that first.
He did, and he, I guess he was a good dancer, and one of the movie executives took lessons from him, and she was so impressed by him that she offered him a role in a movie, and as we know, he became very famous.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, in Hollywood, it started out, I'm sure, with just one studio, but by the 1920s, there was a number of struggling, if not later prosperous studios, but that called Hollywood like their home, right?
There were. He was fortunate to have connections with the beginning studio, and as time progressed, he was a wise businessman, and he knew to have a business, I mean, have a town be successful, he needed to have a thriving business that both high executives could make a living and lower, I don't know, people say doing the filming, whatever, the extras, also would have a job. So he aggressively sought the industry to come and settle. In fact, a big majority of the studios, when they arrived in Hollywood, stayed in his hotel, Hollywood Hotel, and brought their whole cast and everything to stay there.
Well, at that time, the studios were just struggling, trying to survive and prosper, I think. So they needed every advantage they could, and your great-grandfather gave them a lot of support, it sounded like.
Right, he did. And one of the nice things that happened long ago was really they didn't have studios. It was outdoors. And California, besides he had developed kind of a modern city, we had beautiful sunshine.
Good.
Because they couldn't film long ago without the sunshine. And also Hollywood was kind of unique. It's kind of centrally located. It's near the ocean, so you could do a pirate scene at the ocean, or it's kind of near the desert. You could do a cowboy scene. He built the beautiful bank on the corner. They could do film robberies at the bank. So it kind of offered everything they needed to have a successful studio.
But The Great Train Robbery, if I remember correctly, was the first movie, I think, of any note worth. But was it a product of father was involved, or one of his studios in Hollywood, or where did that come about?
Well, I think it was. He wasn't really actually in the movie industry. He was a businessman that I would call kind of like, you know, you play a game of marbles and the world is vying to have Hollywood come stay.
Oh,
I
yes.
mean, originally they were in Los Angeles, in New York, and he just had a way of convincing them to come to stay in Hollywood. He was just a wonderful businessman, and so he got them to stay. Another thing he did which helped is right next to Hollywood, which is kind of over the hill, actually where Universal currently is, he developed 48,000 acres and made this wonderful town of Van Nuys, Reseda, and Canoga Park.
Yes.
And so he had places like the beginning movie stars and directors stayed in Whitley Heights, which was a place he developed, and the lower paying people all stayed in the valley. So he kind of set it up so it was perfect. He was a visionary man in the sense that he brought the streetcar to Hollywood. He brought electricity to Hollywood, the telephone. Everything was kind of new. In fact, one of the exciting things he brought to Hollywood was the first electric lit sign.
How about that?
And that was before the Hollywoodland sign. He had a sign, it said Whitley Heights. If you, your listeners would go to my webpage, it's called The Father of Hollywood. On the cover of the book, you'll see the first sign in Hollywood was Whitley Heights. And he was instrumental in getting the Hollywood sign put up. His business partner, Harry Chandler, who owned the Los Angeles Times, was trying to sell his land as well. And back then, because electricity was new, you could put up an electric lit sign and it was seen from a great distance because there was no other lights in the sky to compete with it. And so he suggested to his partner put up a sign saying Hollywood land for sale. It was going to be there for a year. And we have our Hollywood sign.
Wow.
And as everybody knows, eventually the land, I think actually the land part almost fell off because the sign quite a few years ago was kind of deteriorating, and they raised funds and got it restored. And then last year, we almost lost the sign again. A real estate development company that had purchased the land from Howard Hughes many years ago decided that they were going to sell it and develop houses on the hill. Possibly, fortunately, is one of the good side effects of the economy slowing down. They really weren't able to develop and sell the land, and the city of L.A. was fortunate enough to rally around a lot of people and come up with funds. In fact, Hugh Hefner came up with the last million to save the sign. So
Wow. It
looks like the sign is there to stay. It's been added to, there. I don't know how many people know, but there's Griffith Park is there, the observatory, and they've connected the land for the sign with the park, so it should be there forever.
Good. Well, let's stop just a minute now. You've written a book called The Father of Hollywood,
Yeah. And
your website is thefatherofhollywood.com. Is that right?
That's correct.
Starts with the book,
The. Right, but if you put fatherofhollywood.com, it'll be fine, too. I kind of own both domains. I figured...
Good for you.
If being a business person, just like my great-grandfather, you might as well have both, so either one actually gets you to the site. But the book is kind of exciting because it's really a historical book. It's kind of written like Gone with the Wind, in the sense it seems more like... fictional story, but it's actually a nonfiction story based on my great-grandmother's diary. So the conversations that are in the book aren't made-up conversations. It's actually conversations she recorded on her own. I guess she saw, although she never completed it, she saw the potential of Hollywood. She actually lived till 1951, so she did watch the whole change of Hollywood going through its golden years.
Well,
you realized I was there when it started.
Yes.
And this is an amazing history. Like, Hollywood has changed our world.
Yes, definitely. Now, you mentioned the Hollywood being from a Chinese who couldn't pronounce it, and he was hauling wood.
Mm-hmm.
But and you also mentioned that your great-grandfather was a good businessman. He had folks in the valley and then executives as well. Is there any connection? I mean, there's a famous Chinese restaurant, I think, in Hollywood, isn't it?
Well,
how do you pronounce
there's
that?
There's a very famous Japanese restaurant. It's actually what used to be Whitley Hill. Originally had a place called Whitley Hill and Whitley Heights, and there's currently, it's a wonderful Japanese restaurant. I can't think of the name at the moment. You know, sometimes names, maybe it'll pop in a minute. But my husband and I eat there often, and it's very nice. The food is wonderful. And you can look out on the whole valley. But maybe what you're thinking that's Chinese, that my great-grandmother kind of takes credit for having be Chinese, is the Grauman's Chinese Theater.
That's right. Now, tell us about that.
Well, my great-grandmother and great-grandfather traveled the world, numerous times. I think they went around the world five times. Hmm. They went to Europe almost every year. My great-grandfather, when he first arrived in Los Angeles, opened a jewelry company similar to what Tiffany's would be in New York, although it was in Los Angeles. And so every year he would go to Europe to purchase diamonds to get a better deal so he could pass on the discount to his customers. So in their travels, one year my great-grandmother went, which was kind of daring at the time, because we have to look at when she was born. She was born in the 1800s. Back then, women didn't travel and do a lot of the things we do today.
Mm-hmm.
So, but she went with five women. She was one of the first women to go to China, and she visited all the special places there. And when she came back to Hollywood, she went out to eat with Sid Grauman. He was the person who owned the Grauman's Chinese. And she was telling him of all the wonders of China. And lo and behold, he decided to build the Grauman's Chinese.
Good for him.
And one of the nice things, if you go to the Grauman's Chinese, is there's lots of relics that he actually had imported from China. He had to get special permission from the Chinese government to have them brought into the country. But the amazing part of the Grauman's Chinese that probably most people go to see is the footprints in the front of the theater. Like, you can go there and see, does your foot match John Wayne's footprint? Or you can find your famous star, you know, you like. I remember as a child going there, and like Shirley Temple's handprints are there, and so it's kind of fun.
Yes.
Well, so, I don't know if you, have you been out to Hollywood?
I've been there, but I haven't been to that particular location. I haven't. I was there. I've been down Rodeo Drive, I think, and stayed at a hotel near where ABC headquarters is. Anyway, it's been a while back. My memory is not all that keen, but I did not go to Grumman Theater, or Grumman's Chinese restaurant.
Chinese, right.
I didn't go to the Kodiak Theater.
I don't know when you were there. Hollywood kind of in the 70s had kind of a downturn, and lately they're kind of trying to build it back up. And Cirque du Soleil currently is in Hollywood, and they're putting on a show kind of the history of Hollywood, so it's kind of exciting. You were mentioning ABC. Let's see, be back at Halloween, just a little bit before Halloween. I was doing some things with the Chamber, and ABC as well, Ion LA, came out and did some filming. I was on, well, the show isn't out yet. It'll be out in a few months, and it's celebrating. It should be a wonderful show about the first 100 years of Hollywood. And so I was telling the story about how Hollywood was named, but I think it should be a great show because, as you know, Hollywood's changed so much over the last 100 years. The filming, the ability, I don't know how many movies you see. I see quite a few movies and talk about them. And like the special effects change that's occurred over the last few years is pretty amazing.
Yes. Yeah, well, I remember some old movies, but even back in silent time. But you mentioned a while ago, I think the Griffith, D.W. Griffith, I think, was a great silent film producer. Is that right?
He was, and it was kind of exciting back then. They lived in the beginning of it, and they were friends with Charlie Chaplin, Rudolph Valentino, and a lot of the actors. When you lived in Hollywood, you could be walking down the street and they'd be filming, say, a mob scene at the bank or something, a robbery, and they might say to you, how would you like to be in the movies? Because you didn't need to learn any lines. You just had to do what the director said. In fact, Griffith had a problem. He had the Gish sisters, and for some reason, Lillian and Dorothy Gish looked, you know, a lot alike, and so he mixed their names up. So to solve that problem, he'd just have a pink ribbon tied on one of them and a blue on the other. He'd just say, blue, look scared. So that's how simple it was to be an actor or an actress at the beginning. You just had to, you know, overemphasize your facial, like, oh, I'm afraid, open your mouth, oh, no, we're being robbed or something. You didn't have to say a line. And back then, also, which was kind of nice, if you woke up and it was kind of cloudy, you could go back to bed because they could only film on sunny days, so it was kind of a fairly easy way to make a living. In fact, to help out, my great-grandfather offered his land for filming, and I have like a brochure. It's by Rodeo Randall. It's for the filming of a Western, and what they did is they passed out flyers and said, come to the filming and, you know, wear a pretty dress, bring a picnic lunch, watch us film, and you might be chosen to be one of the dancers, like they would do kind of a dance and part of the show. And you would be one of the beautiful girls picked out of the audience to dance with the cowboys, and you could be in a movie.
Well, we're going to have to take a bottom hour break for the news about a couple of minutes, but folks, you're listening to Galen Keith. Do you, whose middle name, Whitley, is important because it was her grand ancestors that came up with the name and developed Hollywood. And she has a book, and we'll be coming back after the news. We'll be talking about the book and her website address you can visit, and we'll be right back.
IRN, USA Radio News. I'm Mark Thomas. One thing Senate Democrats and Republicans agree on could mean help for unemployed veterans and companies doing business with the government. The legislation also includes the first tiny slice of President Barack Obama's jobs plan that is likely to become law. It would include tax credits for hiring disabled vets. Forecasters say Tropical Storm Sean could become a hurricane as it makes a turn to the northeast toward Bermuda. A tropical storm warning is in effect for Bermuda, and forecasters are warning of strong surf and rip currents. There's still no official word on arrests after police used pepper spray on about 2,000 students who gathered in State College, Pennsylvania to protest the firing of head football coach Joe Paterno. The Penn State students flooded downtown for about 3 hours after Paterno and University President Graham Spanier were fired amid a growing furor linked to their handling of sex abuse allegations. This is IRN, USA Radio News.
Attention homeowners. The Obama administration is pressuring lenders to do more to prevent foreclosure with its Home Affordability and Stability Plan. If you own a home and you're having trouble making your payments or facing foreclosure, we can help. Call the National Mortgage Helpline at 800-951-7207. We now have the ability to stop foreclosure proceedings, forgive late payments and penalties, take your adjustable rate mortgage to a fixed rate, and reduce your mortgage payment to as low as 2%.
We were 3 months behind on our payments, and the National Mortgage Helpline was able to get our mortgage company to take the payments we were behind, put them on the back of our loan, and lower our interest rate. Now we have a payment we can afford.
Simply call 800-951-7207. Again, that's 800-951-7207. If you're having trouble paying your mortgage, call the National Mortgage Helpline today at 800-951-7207. You don't need equity or good credit. You just need to call 800-951-7207.
Welcome back. I'm Jack Mizell, and on the phone with me is Galen Whitley Keith, and she's written a book called The Father of Hollywood, and she has a website also by that same name, thefatherofhollywood.com, and we're enjoying walking through history with her. And the next question is, we've understood that several things contributed, but like good weather and plenty of sunshine. But actually, it was your father that helped persuade them by offering them a place to stay and a financial institution, and so it developed over the period of years. Now, exactly how long did your grandfather live?
Well, he was born in 1846, and he lived till 1931. Hmm. He actually went to the first Academy Awards show, and so he did really watch the beginning of the industry evolve. He was friends with a lot of the people. What he did is he owned land. Originally, he owned the acreage, and he took about 350 acres out of the land he owned, and he developed it originally, put the hotel and the bank. But then later, more towards the 1920s, he developed an area that was called Whitley Heights, and it was on the hill, like I said before, and had a view of the ocean from it. And what he did that was unique, he sent his architect to Italy, and he studied architecture, and he kind of changed the style of architecture in California from the Victorian era to Mediterranean homes. And what he did that was unique, usually you have your living room on the bottom floor of your home and your bedrooms upstairs, but to take advantage of the views, some houses he had were flipped the opposite way, and when you walked in the house, the bedrooms were downstairs and the living room was upstairs to take a look at the view. And so that was a very attractive thing, the up and coming. As we know about Hollywood even today, they always wanted to be the first.
Yes.
To show off and have the best. So a majority of them settled there. In fact, his friend Sid Grauman, that had the Grauman's Chinese Theater, was always promoting things as well. In fact, he came up with the first Hollywood star, you know, like you get in a car and you drive around and or a bus, a van, and you see where the stars live. And so Sid Grauman came up with the idea of toured the Hollywood stars' homes, and the majority of them lived in Whitley Heights.
Wow.
And so he he was able to get them to stay there. And even today, Whitley Heights is on the National Registry of Historic Places. Like, if you buy a home there, you can change the inside to upgrade it, but the outside of the homes are all going to stay historically the same.
In terms of acreage, about what's the size of Whitley Heights?
It's about 200 acres.
200.
So it's quite nice. The sad part is as history progressed, the Hollywood Freeway got put through part of it, and so, like, Charlie Chaplin's home was torn down. But progress is progress, I guess.
Change, yes.
Yes.
If we were going there, what significance does Whitley have to do with the, I think it was the Barrymores, there was Lionel and his sister, and they came on later, but I think your grandfather, great-grandfather died in 31, so they came to
Ethel Barrymore lived in Whitley Heights, so they knew each other. So
that's good.
I think the Barrymores, well, even today there's a Barrymore, Drew Barrymore, who's, you know, a wonderful actress, so they've actually played a very historical role in Hollywood. At this time, a few weeks ago, I met, it's kind of exciting, with a producer. I don't have all the details yet. The contracts haven't all been signed, but it looks like they're making a movie of the book, which is always exciting.
Yes, I would think so.
And at one point, which I wasn't unfortunately successful in contacting Drew Barrymore, but I was thinking she would have been a wonderful person to play my great-grandmother just because of all the history her family has with Hollywood. They've been there, and they've done so many wonderful movies throughout the time.
Well, I particularly followed the movies of Lionel Barrymore. He was really quite an accomplished person. I mean, you could identify with him, and even in It's a Wonderful Life, even in a wheelchair and a banker, you could relate to him. He was good.
You love him and you hate him, kind of guy. Well, yes, it's kind of interesting. Way back, well, this was actually even before the movie industry arrived, there was my great-grandfather wanted to have some way to make Hollywood stand out and kind of in competition with Los Angeles. And in the Hollywood Hotel, he built an auditorium where they could have people perform. And obviously back then, it wasn't quite the same entertainment we have today. It was parlor music. And a woman named Carrie Jacobs Bond wrote parlor music. And actually, one of her songs is played in It's a Wonderful Life. So it kind of came a full circle.
Yes, it did. Now, I have a daughter that lives near San Simeon, and I think that gentleman was a newspaper guy. But he had an affection for one of the Hollywood actresses, and so that's sort of a spectacular place. I've
right,
been
William
there.
William Randolph Hearst, is that
yes.
who you were talking about?
That's exactly right.
Right, he actually lived, he didn't live. Down the street, the director that directed his mistress lived down the street from my great-grandparents, and Marion Davies was his mistress, and my great-grandmother knew her. She was a nice girl, except for one problem she had. She stuttered. And so when the movies went from being silent to having speaking roles, she kind of dropped out of the movies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was one of the problems a lot of the silent film people had, because they really hadn't had to learn lines or anything like that. And so Norma Talmadge, actually, who lived in Whitley Heights, was one of the older actresses. And the story goes that she accidentally stepped in the cement at the Grauman's Chinese. And she was one of the first stars to put her footprints in the when they went got around to to putting footprints in. She was one of the first stars because Sid Grauman realized, because they were all businessmen, if you have a star's footprint, people will want to come see the star or put their footprint in.
Okay.
Today they're still putting footprints in, or you'll go see one of the past stars. Like you said, there's so many wonderful old movies. It's hard to pick your favorite. I've looked at many sites like listing the top 100 movies, you know, just because we're on the 100th anniversary, And, I mean, you can go from, like you said, Gone with the Wind, Casablanca, Star Wars. How do you pick the best one?
Yes. One of my favorite movies is the Oxbow Incident. If I remember correctly, there was Henry Fonda was in that, and he was also in The Grapes of Wrath. I wonder, which we're talking about, maybe 10 years later, but those even aspiring actors, when they came to Hollywood, did they have any connection with Whitley? I mean, since it was such a vast development there, I mean, they had the Whitley Heights and hotels and et cetera. I just wondered if that continued on even in the later years when studios really controlled at that time, right?
Right. I would say it would be, well, it's kind of like you or I. Like, people ask, how are they related? Well, my great-grandparents, in their development, because they developed a lot, gave lots of parties. I mean, numerous parties. Parties like I never can even imagine doing. It's not in my lifestyle. But they would have 100 people to a party, or 800 people to a party. That's the size. It would range that big. And so they would have all these people. They knew them all, and they would discuss business and things. But as far as technically being in the filming industry, they weren't. You know, how we have friends, you see them every year at a Christmas party. You are friends with them, but you're not necessarily involved in their business. So they just had lots of stars that they knew that they were friends with. The Hollywood, when they arrived, probably had around 14 ranches that you could see from their property, like on the hill. As you know, it gradually evolved. And so they were friends because it was a small town type of place. You would walk through the town. You knew the local grocer and your paper boy. Kind of a different world than there is today in big cities. Well, so they kind of knew everyone.
When I was just very young, we didn't have a theater palaces, so to speak. It was small, very small town in southeast Alabama. But the very first movie I ever saw was one that had to do with the Civil War. I think D.W. Griffith did The Birth of a Nation, I think is the name of it.
Oh, that was one of the epic films of the time, yeah.
And
so what did you think of that? Was it kind of amazing?
Well, I think I thought it was amazing because actually I went to see it at a place called Louisville, which is a very small part in Barber County, and we went in there, and it was, I must have been 8 years old, something like that. And, you know, down in our part of the country, we live in the wilderness, so to speak, and we were, which brings me to another thought. In our being reared here, we always concentrate on good. We thought the greatest achievement in life was to write a good paragraph, which was a very hard thing to do. And, you know, I look at those old movies and read a lot about, like, William Faulkner, who had a connection with Howard Hawks, and all the Harvard Five-Foot Shelf of Classics. All these things had real content. They had true characters. But today it seems to be that they just try to do computer graphics and action and stuff. It's hard to identify with the characters because they're always being blown up or shooting somebody. I don't see any content in the current genre of movies, but that's just my perspective since I'm so old, you know.
Well, I think your perspective is correct. As you're stating, the movie industry as well as the book industry is kind of they're in a changing mode, both of them. I'm in California. I assume there's borders, or there were borders back in Alabama, like the bookstore closed. I think with self-publishing and all the things that are going on, the big book industries and the way we like things quick, quick, quick are pumping out books. Like you said, there's lots of books coming out, but not really the great classics that we had in the past. And so Hollywood, partially probably because of the downturn economy, and they're also in the change because of the internet and people pirating movies, that they're not spending the big money. They're being very cautious. And a part of the thing I do as well as write on my book, a lot of times I talk, like this summer I talked about all the movies that were in the shows on radio stations, and people would ask me what I thought would win an Academy Award, and I'd be going, I don't know.
Good
question. Because like you said, I don't see the probably my favorite movie this summer was Midnight in Paris by Woody Allen, which I would have never thought would have been. Yeah, but it kind of had some thought-provoking things in it more than, like you said, just blowing up. Like Super 8, which also came out in the summer, had a fantastic train wreck as far as, you know, all the special effects. But the storyline didn't offer that much.
You know, my daughter is a songwriter as well as an entertainer. She went to Florida State University and et cetera. And I tried to impress on her in her younger years, and I think we, to some degree, succeeded, that material is everything that's important. I think probably it's the lack of material that's damaging Hollywood. I think sometimes people find it more economical to do an effect or a train wreck, if you will, somewhere maybe in Canada or something else, because they don't have content. I really believe that the material decides really the destiny of basically the industry itself, as well as the actors and actresses. It's just, there's such a dearth of material now until, I don't think there's any more of these John Steinbecks and William Faulkner and things like that.
The sad part is, first of all, like you said, they had quality writing, but even for them, and like say Mark Twain or anyone, he originally like worked for a newspaper. It took him several years to develop his style, if you want to call it. Not that he wasn't always a great writer, but you know, as we grow older, we get wiser, we develop, and there isn't the opportunity to do that. You just have to be there and pump it out the first time. Or they go next, next, next. And so, like, long ago when you edited a book, for example, with the book, I was talking to the editor, and it seemed like the editing process happened so swiftly because, as you know, this is my first book, so it's, and I wasn't initially an author, and I'm doing it mostly because the history had never been put out there, and it's such a vital part of how Hollywood came to be that I wanted the history published. But as far as editing, they used to maybe edit your book, say, 30 to 50 times. Now you're lucky if you get 10 edits, which it's sad, like you said, because you need people. I like going to book clubs over the time the book has evolved, because I've gone to book clubs and sat with them and talked and said, what did you think of the book? What's wrong with the book? Because the reader can tell you.
Well,
this is missing or that's missing. Or, I mean, initially with the book, now the book has a beginning chapter that kind of tells you how I put the book together. And so it answers questions for you before you get into the book.
Yes. Well, in my writing training, I studied under Madison Pierce Jones, you must have basically a theme and an expansion of it and a conclusion. From what we've had in a conversation, I think your first book, as you say, may be bringing the material that is so absent and otherwise in the area. I remember the first book of Harper Lee was To Kill a Mockingbird, and since then she hadn't written anything, but she did quite a good job in her first book, and I sound like you've done an equal type job.
I think it has turned out to be a pretty nice book. People say it is. I think now that we're in negotiation to doing the movie, I'm not actually writing the screenplay, but like you said, who writes the screenplay and the actors they get will all make the difference. As you know, Gone with the Wind was a wonderful movie. It's one of my favorites. I actually own it, and it was her only really book that she wrote. But I think what you have to do, like you said, I went and saw, and I actually, when I was talking on the radio, said, The King's Speech is going to be the best movie. And when I went and saw it, I was sitting in the audience, and it just kind of moved you. And at the end of the movie, the audience spontaneously clapped. And that seldom happens anymore.
Yes.
And I think they were moved by the story and how noble the king was and how his life had been hard, yet he was able to overcome his difficulties. And I think we are moved by something that moves us, like Gone with the Wind. Her saga just pulls us into the movie.
Yes. And yeah,
so I think we need a story with depth that draws us there. And I'm hoping the book does have some conflict in it. It's actually really a love story between my great-grandparents. But it also gives you a look into his life, which is from his wife's perspective, which it's kind of interesting to see what motivated him, why he did what he did.
Well, the thing it sounds like is so classic in the sense that there is a real, genuine person walking across the stage where the backdrop is something like in Gone with the Wind was the Civil War, and Grapes of Wrath, it was a dust bowl, so to speak. But in your case, you're probably got a story that is based on your grandparents, great-grandparents, but you also get to get glimpses of the true Hollywood history. Is that right? Am I wrong?
Right, you do, and it's a unique time because if you go to the, well, kind of really when it does begin in the 1800s, but really it starts in the 1900s, the development of Hollywood. The world, it's kind of a historic snapshot that a lot of us don't realize how different the world was just as little as 100 years ago. At the turn of the century, an exciting thing was a zipper, which we don't even think about. We've had zippers our whole life, you know. So they were excited to get a zipper to put in your clothes and to have an automobile, to have electric lights, to have plumbing. It's something we just take for granted. If my great-grandfather was here today and he would probably be amazed. Like you said, he'd probably like a movie with more depth, but he would be amazed to see the special effects, the 3D movies, where it's gone from the silent movies that he watched, really.
Yes.
And his lifetime.
Well,
but like you said, I think they do need movies with more depth in them.
Yes. My son tells me that Star Wars is really just a copy of an old Cowboys movie, but with different actors and background. So I don't know. Maybe he's right or wrong. I don't know. But the thing is, the stories can be intense, but they have to be well acted, and they have to have a good place you can identify with. And it sounds like your book has all the ingredients, and certainly Hollywood is something that would attract anything.
You know what's unique? What I like about it, when I was younger, I used to read a lot of fiction books. But now I found, like, I like nonfiction books because that's what happened.
Yes.
Like, what's in the story, whether you like what happened or you don't like what happened, that is what happened.
Yes.
So there is some conflicts that probably people go, I didn't want that to happen in the book. But it's not like you go, oh, you just wrote that in to sell a book. It's what happened in his life.
I have a friend.
He did have some tragedy. I mean, life has its ups and downs for all of us.
I have a friend who was participating in the Normandy invasion, and we got talking about it, and he said, your problem, Jack, is you think World War II is just one war, but there were 6 million people there, 6 million wars.
So, well, that's true, it is. I hadn't thought of that ever. That'd be a good thing in a book.
Well, he's quite a good thinker, and I told him, how close did it come? He said, well, about 2 inches from my head with a bullet whizzing by. That's how close I came.
Wow. Yeah, and that would be memorable. You'd never forget hearing that.
Anyway,
my father was in World War II as well. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't talk about it because it wasn't like going to a party.
No, it wasn't.
It was
well, I'm it. Really, I haven't read your book yet, but I'm really thirsty to read it because it sounds like it's wonderful content. For lack of anything better, I think you remember the Titanic, they actually tried to create a story in front of the background again, and I hope that you have created a great story in the front so that it will be a classic for years to come.
I'm hoping that it will. I'm hoping there'll be great actors and actresses, and the story will inspire people, because the point is, he was an inspiring man. He built over 100 towns in his lifetime, which hardly anyone did that to begin with, and he brought many industries to California. For example, they went to Egypt on a vacation. They were floating down the Nile. He looked out and saw the cotton fields. Because he was friends with Teddy Roosevelt, he knew a lot of dignitaries. He met with the people over there, and he was able to export Egyptian cotton seed to California. And today, the cotton industry in California is one of the major industries we have. So not only did he do Hollywood, he did all kinds of things. So I think the story will be, he's like this guy on the big screen that you'll feel like, he couldn't have done all that, but he did.
So what we would call him, I went and graduated in architecture, and we used to study the Renaissance man who could basically do everything.
Right, and then what's also unique about him at the time is he did live kind of in a time like today, where the economy began to dip, and he was developing the San Fernando Valley, like I told you, the 48,000 acres, and he had business partners who wanted to foreclose on people who were getting kind of behind, and he said no. He had integrity. It's something we need in the world today. He was a man of his word. He said, no, these people are working hard. We'll help them. You know, we'll work with them. And so he didn't foreclose on people. He ended up actually buying the remaining assets of that company out, and he took the blow himself, which not very many people would do today.
To me, I compare that to the St. Bernard has a barrel under his neck and helping people survive a severe storm. And then there's vultures sitting on the tree waiting for somebody to get stumble in the desert. And today, we've got to take your father's, grandfather's approach. We've got to be more of the St. Bernard type rather than the vultures. That's just my...
Right. He thought his name and his honor and, you know, was more valuable than anything, and he didn't want to tarnish it. He was a Victorian gentleman.
Yes. I like your great-grandfather already. He sounded like a man after my own heart.
He wasn't perfect. He had his flaws, but overall... He was just a good man. Originally when I wrote the book, I based it on part of my great-grandmother's effects were donated to the UCLA Library, so they've been in a special collection since the 1950s, but a good portion was in my parents' garage, and so I started there reading all the articles she saved and things, but since then I've actually looked around and I've never read anything that said, oh, he did anything bad. He was just a good, kind person.
We've got a couple of minutes left, and I want to be sure that everyone is aware of how to get your book, the name of it, your website, anything that, because I think they deserve this kind of great information, so give it to us.
Okay, you can go to the Father of Hollywood, and you can purchase the book there. I'll send you a signed copy if you want to buy it, like as a Christmas present. If there's any book clubs out there that would like to buy the book, I would give them a discount. My email's there. They could email me. But what I like to do with book clubs, if they're interested, they can read the book, have their club meeting, and if I know the time they're doing it, I'll call them up and they can ask me questions because I like to talk to the people. My book is in bookstores as well. At least I can only go by California, Barnes & Noble, Borders. I'm not sure in Alabama where it might be. Your local bookstore can order it from my publisher, or you can buy it on Amazon always. So it has lots of ways you can do it. It makes a great Christmas gift, and it's a bit of history. And like I said, it's not so much all the hype and rumors of Hollywood. It's just the beginning foundations, the people he meant, and how he lived his historic life and the good things he did and the things that were happening there.
Well, I assume that you used GG on your email address because that was what your great-grandmother was called, right?
It is, but it's kind of a little family history. It's actually my grandma name. I have grandchildren at this point, and because our family fortunately lives a long time, when my children were born, they had four great-grandmothers.
Oh, my goodness.
And two grandmothers, so it got complicated having grandma names. So my mother came up with, her name was Mary Ellen, and she was Mimi. And I have an older sister who became Bebe because her name's Bonnie. And my name's Galen, so I just became Gigi, which happens to fit with that Gigi. So that's how we solved having so many great grandparents and things. So the kids aren't confused. We have our own name.
Well, I sure enjoyed visiting with you, and we've got to go, and we'll do it again, okay?
Well, thank you so much, Jack. I had a great time.
The Spirit of Geneva County.
Thanks.
AM 1150, WGEA, Geneva, Alabama.